Srimad Bhagavatam, 6th canto, chapter 17, entitled Mother Parvati curses Chitraketu. On the board, text 2 and 3, there is also a summary by Srila Prabhupada. So we'll read the summary and then we'll read the first verse, second and third. Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. Mother Parvati curses Chitraketu. The 17th chapter is summarized as follows. This chapter describes Chitraketu's receiving the body of an asura or demon because of joking with Lord Shiva. After personally talking with the Supreme Personality of Godhead, King Chitraketu enjoyed life in his airplane with the women of the Vidyadhara planet, engaging in the congregational chanting of the glories of the Lord. He began flying his plane and traveling in outer space. One day, while traveling like this, he wandered into the bowers of Sumeru Mountain, where he came upon Lord Shiva embracing Parvati, surrounded by an assembly of siddhas, charanas, and great sages. Seeing Lord Shiva in that situation, Chitraketu laughed very loudly. But Parvati became very angry at him and cursed him. Because of this curse, Chitraketu later appeared as the demon Vritrasura. Chitraketu, however, was not at all afraid of Parvati's curse, and thus he spoke as follows. Everyone in human society enjoys happiness and distress according to his past deeds, and in this way travels in the material world. Therefore, no one is responsible for his happiness and distress. One is controlled by the influence of material nature in the material world. Yet, one thinks himself the doer of everything. In this material world, which is made of the external energy of the Supreme Lord, one is sometimes cursed and sometimes favored, and thus he sometimes enjoys in the upper planetary systems and sometimes suffers in the lower planets. But all these situations are the same because they are within this material world. None of these positions has any factual existence, for all of them are temporary. A Supreme Personality of Godhead is the ultimate controller, because the material world is created, maintained, and annihilated under his control, while he nonetheless remains neutral to these different transformations of the material world in time and space. The material external energy of the Supreme Personality of Godhead is in charge of this material world. The Lord helps the world by creating situations for the living entities within it. Last paragraph of the summary. When Chitraketu spoke in this way, all the members in the great assembly in which Lord Shiva and Parvati were present were astonished. Then Lord Shiva began speaking about the devotees of the Lord. A devotee is neutral in all conditions of life, whether in the heavenly planets or hellish planets, whether liberated from the material world or conditioned by it, and whether blessed with happiness or subjected to distress. These are all merely dualities created by the external energy. Being influenced by the external energy, the living entity accepts a gross and subtle material body, and in this illusory position, he apparently suffers miseries, although everyone is part and parcel of the Supreme Lord. The so-called demigods consider themselves independent lords, and in this way, they are misled from understanding that all living entities are part of the Supreme. This chapter concludes by glorifying the devotee and the Supreme Personality of Godhead. Text 1. Shisuka vacha yatashchara chantharitu nantas tasai kritva dishe namaha vidyadaras chitraketush chachara gagane charaha. Translation. Srila Shukadeva Goswami said, after offering obeisances to the direction from which Ananta, the Supreme Personality of Godhead, had disappeared, Chitraketu began traveling in outer space as the head of the Vidyadharas. Text 2 and 3 on the board. Salaksham Varsha Lakshanam Avyahata Balindriha Stuyamanu Mahayogi Munibhi Siddha Charanai Kulachalindra Dhrunishu Nana Sankalpa Siddhishu Reme Vidyadhara Stribhir Gapoyam Harimishwaram. Purport by His Divine Grace, A.C. Bhaktivedanta Swami Srila Prabhupada, Founder Acharya of the International Society for Krishna Consciousness. Being praised by great sages and saints and by the inhabitants of Siddha Loka and Charana Loka, Chitraketu, the most powerful mystic yogi, wandered about enjoying life for millions of years. With bodily strength and senses free from deterioration, he traveled within the valleys of Sumeru Mountain, which is the place of perfection for various kinds of mystic power. In those valleys, he enjoyed life with the women of Vidyadhara Loka by chanting the glories of the Supreme Lord Hari. Purport. It is to be understood that Maharaj Chitraketu, although surrounded by beautiful women from Vidyadhara Loka, did not forget to glorify the Lord by chanting the holy name of the Lord. It has been proved in many places that one who is not contaminated by any material condition, who is a pure devotee, engaged in chanting the glories of the Lord, should be understood to be perfect. Om Agyanati Virandasya Agiranjana Salakaya Chakshanamritami Natasmaishi. The theme of this section, these particular words, the theme we can extract is the difference between substance and appearance. We are in the world of appearances because this world is created to appear in a certain way to allow certain types of experiences. So we tend to create categories and patterns through which we judge situations, people, countries, cultures, and sometimes we may fall into over-classifying. Some classification is intrinsic in nature, is unavoidable, and living without any form of classification would be extremely hard. There are men in this world, and there are women in this world, and there are standards of behavior. If you belong to a gender, you deal with the other gender in a specific way. The scriptures, Manu Samhita, and so on, they tell you about these social guidelines. At the same time, we should also not forget that beyond and above the temporary categories manifested by the trigunas, there is a higher reality. And over and above the body and the senses of the embodied soul, there is a shining personality. Shining personality with intrinsic Krishna prema. So we should very carefully respect everyone. First of all, because it's very difficult to judge the level of elevation, the level of personal development that people may possess. And therefore, a safe policy, a wise policy, is to offer respect and give the benefit of the doubt to everyone. Here, Chitraketu, someone who is envious or someone who doesn't know his background, he has just seen God face to face and he has been instructed by Narada Muni. He's been initiated by Narada Muni. So he's a disciple of Narada Muni. Chitraketu is also part of our Sampradaya. He spoke with the Lord face to face. One who doesn't know this background, he may be confused. Now he's going around in this very unusual traveling Sankirtan party as the head of the Vidyadharas. I don't know much about the Vidyadharas. The Vidyadharas appear many times in the Srimad Bhagavatam, generally together with the Siddhas and Charanas. Sukadeva Goswami, in the second canto, when he describes the first step of spiritual life, he describes meditation on the Virat Rupa. And these beings, which Srila Prabhupada defines the human demigods. In other words, they're not like the highest controllers of the universe. They're like human, but they're not really human. They're human demigods. Superior beings. And he describes them, including the Vidyadharas, as representing in the Vishwarupa the musical sense of the Lord. Music is a great pleasure. There is a $1 billion and $1 trillion industry in singing, in recording, in iPods and this and that. MP3 players and all that. Right now we are sitting on a planet of 6 billion people. I'm not sure, but there might be perhaps 1 billion or 500 million with some MP3 player in the ears. So it's a huge business because it's a huge pleasure. And of course, the musical sense of the Lord is supreme. And in this universe, this musical sense, this very refined taste for sound is represented also by the Vidyadharas. So we can imagine, or perhaps we cannot imagine, the level of pleasure Chitraketu Maharaj is experiencing. And where is he traveling? He's not traveling in some a package vacation offered on the internet. What's that site, Make My Trip? Or you find the cheap flights? Those cheap flights, you 2,000 rupees, then you click, becomes 3,000. Then you click, buy, becomes 3,500. is not in such a type of package deals. He has his own, it's not described, but he has his own retinue of ministers, I imagine. So many opulences. And where he flies, there's no economy. There's no economy class. You can't get economy because that is beyond first class. And it's, you know, Sumeru Mountain. Can you imagine the astounding sunrises and sunsets and the reflection on the golden surface of the Sumeru Mountains? And on top of that, which is in one sense even more relevant for us, he's being glorified by great sages, Munibihi, and yogis. He's called Mahayogi. He's not called Mahabogi. He's called Mahayogi. And great sages are glorifying him. So we could see this as the approval of the standard authority for his behavior. So this brings to us the very relevant. Sumeru may not so be relevant for the Bombayites. What they call Mumbaiites? Mumbaiites. Sorry. I don't live here, so. For the inhabitants of Mumbai, whatever you call this place. So, now, Sumeru may be little irrelevant, but what is relevant for us is the principle, is the idea of not making the mistake of seeing a Vaishnava and mistaking him for an ordinary person. Because that's a very dangerous path. And is a path in which we may lose a lot of opportunities. It's like passing near a treasure and not recognizing it, not seeing it. We could get gems and diamonds and beautiful jewels from that treasure chest. But if we don't recognize, we think it's some box, some garbage can lost in the street. We don't get access to that wealth. Similarly, if we see a Vaishnava with material eyes, we project limitation and imperfections on him or her, we lose a great opportunity. The famous story in this connection is the story of the meeting between Gadadhar Pandit and Pundarik Vidyanidhi. Gadadhar Pandit, manifestation of Srimati Radharani, member of the Panchatattva, close associate of Lord Chaitanya. He was living in Navadvip. He was a young Brahmana, Pandita, Gadadhar Pandita. And although he had formal education, everything, he did not have yet taken initiation, formal diksha. Although fully qualified. Pundarik Vidyanidhi. It's a very extraordinary character in Chaitanya Lila. He's from the village Chattagram in East Bengal, now Bangladesh. Mahaprabhu himself, while in Navadvip, sometimes he will fall into ecstasy and cry out, Pundarik! Pundarik Vidyanidhi, oh my father, oh father, when will I see you again? And he will go into deep ecstasy and intense feelings of separation. He will cry tears of love and longing. And the devotees did not know what to do because they did not know who is this Pundarik Vidyanidhi. So they were trying to interpret. They were also Sanskrit scholars and a very learned person. So Pundarik must be Krishna. So it's Krishna. Okay, that's okay. Vidyanidhi. And they will give different Vidyanidhi. Oh, Krishna, you are the Nidhi, the ocean of knowledge. So they were like, they didn't know. Also because, you see, Lord Chaitanya was crying like this, but he never met him in this Leela. He never met him. One is Lord Chaitanya is from Mayapur, Pundarik Vidyanidhi is from Bangladesh. So they never met. But Lord Chaitanya sometimes would go and cry, Pundarik, Pundarik, when I'll see you again, when I'll see. So then when he would come out gradually from this ecstasy, the devotees will ask, but who is this Pundarik Vidyanidhi? We don't know. Can we please, can you explain to us? We would also like to know. And then Lord Chaitanya said, oh, he's an extraordinary lover of God. Nobody can understand him. Nobody can understand him. I really wish he would soon come to Navadvip to bless my existence. I feel so much separation. I will start again crying and feeling so intensely. So everybody started really waiting for the day in which they could also see the personality whom Lord Chaitanya called Father. So one day, inspired by the Lord in the heart, Pundarik Vidyanidhi decided, okay, let's go to Navadvip. And he happened to have a house. He was a very wealthy person. He happened to have a house also in Navadvip. But he went without announcement. He took residence in Navadvip. Nobody knew anything. Very few people knew he had come. And even fewer people knew his glories. Most people just, some Babu from Bangladesh came. Haribo. Hare Krishna, whatever. But the two brothers, Mukunda Datta and Vasudeva Datta, they knew the glories of this gentleman. They knew the glories of Pundarik Vidyanidhi. So they were intensely pleased to know, oh yes, come. Yes, finally come. The Lord will be so pleased. Everybody will be so happy. He's here. He's here. So, because they were also from the same village, Chatragram. So they knew him from before. They knew his glories. They knew the intensity of bhakti he had. He possessed. So Mukunda Datta is a close friend of Gadadhar Pandit. So he had to tell this news to Gadadhar Pandit. So he told Gadadhar Pandit, please come to see this great personality. He's the ocean of love of God. In fact, sometime Lord Chaitanya, instead of Pundarik Vidyanidhi, he would call him Premanidhi, the ocean of Prema. So he was preaching to Gadadhar Pandit, please, let's go and see this great personality. Gadadhar Pandit was also very eager. Very nice, I'm so blessed. I feel so grateful that you're taking me. You're my real friend, Mukunda Prabhu. Thank you. So they went full of expectation. And Gadadhar Pandit was the first time he would see this great personality. So they would go. Knocked on the door. They were let in. Also because there were many disciples. Pundarik Vidyanidhi came with many disciples. He was already an established preacher and spiritual master. So they humbly entered the room. They offered obeisances. And Pundarik Vidyanidhi was sitting on something looking like this mega Vyasasan. Some sort of bedstead. And they started seeing him and seeing his surrounding. And they noticed, Mukunda Datta knew his personality, but for Gadadhar Pandit was new and a bit surprising to see the surrounding and the lifestyle. He was sitting on a bed of very, very sophisticated wood, all inlaid with brass work and some precious stones. Very artistic. He was sitting on a very clean and very fine cotton sheet. He was having two big, very big, humongous pillows, silk pillows. And over him, over his head, there was these drapes, these like curtains, several like ornamental curtains, not just curtains for closing the window or, you know, making it a little dark. Very ornamented brocades, you know, brocade. Very, very finely shining. Everything absolutely rich, opulent. And Puddharik Vinayadin himself was dressed in beautiful silk, the top notch dress. He was having this long hair full of oil, perfumed oil, properly adorned, properly tied. He was even decorated by gopi dots. And the gopi dots were made of a mixture of sandalwood pulp and perfume. And he was chewing betel nuts. And he was having different pitchers and jugs and bottles for water and beverages. It was the image of self-indulgence. He apparently was a great sense enjoyer. And to top it all, on the two sides of his head, there were two mirrors. And he would constantly glance at the mirrors, at his face, with his lips tinged of red from the betel nut chewing. So Gadadhar Pandit, he was very naturally, very renounced. This brahmachari, pandit, you know, scholar, student. So he started becoming a little bit perplexed. So I was thinking, within himself, he was thinking, I came here to see a great devotee, and I see this person. I mean, this person doesn't seem to me a very devotional person. Look at the opulence. Look at the sense enjoyment that is going around here. There was two people who were fanning him. One side, one the other side. Fanning. And everybody was serving him. You want some drink, something like that. So this is the image of the, this is the best of material pleasure. How this can be a pure devotee. Anyway. So, Mukunda Datta, he was very perceptive. So then he looked at the face of Gadadhar Pandit and he understood there was some perplexity there. So Mukunda Datta thought, I have to do something to show who is really this Pundarik Vidyanidhi. And then he started singing one Bhagavatam verse. In a very sweet voice. He was famous as a very sweet singer. So much famous that even nowadays in Mumbai, every day we sing Sanjaya Mukunda Vasu Goshadigaya. So he started singing one verse. Ahu Bakiyam Stanakalakutam Jigham sayapa yayadap pyasadvi lebhe lebhe gatam dhatryuchitam kutonyam. Ah, yes, kamvadayalum sharanam vrajima. This is a verse spoken by Uddhava. in the third canto of the Srimad Bhagavatam, Uddhava spoken to Vidura in the ecstasy of separation from Krishna, and the verse says, where am I going to find? How am I going to surrender to somebody else other than Krishna who can be so merciful as Krishna? Krishna is so merciful that he gave the position of a mother to somebody, Putana Rakshasi, who came there to kill him by smearing poison for her breast. Sharanam Brajima. Where am I going to find somebody more qualified for my surrender? It's a famous verse. As soon as this verse was sung by Mukunda, Pundarik Vidyanidhi became stunned. And he started manifesting all the symptoms of ecstatic turmoil. His heart started churning vigorously, and his body started manifesting all the symptoms of bodily transformation. He started crying. He started perspiring. Hairs stood on end on his body. He started roaring. He lost complete control of himself. It's like he was in a fit of epileptic attack. He lost completely consciousness, external consciousness of who he was, where he was, who was there in the room. And he started trembling violently. And he started going into a madness of love and shouting, Krishna, oh Krishna, I love you so much. Where are you? Krishna, oh Krishna, oh Krishna. And he started kicking around, kicking, boom, 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 boom. And all this very, very valuable bottles and jugs were all flying around, breaking here, boom, boom, boom. He was just, Krishna, roar, like that. He started taking his, Krishna. And then he started taking his clothes, his fine silk clothes, and breaking them apart. Krishna, crack! Krishna, crack, crack, crack. He started making a total mess. Those curtains. And then he started trembling so violently. Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur, he said that he was trembling so energetic, so vigorously, was trembling. And then three people could not keep him still. And he went like that for 6 hours. At the end, everything was destroyed. His hair completely disheveled. His clothes was as a total rags. This place was a total destruction. In the meanwhile, while the ecstasy was going on, Gadadhar Pandit had confided to Mukunda Datta Prabhu. He said, Mukunda Prabhu, I feel very guilty because in my mind, the seed of doubt was planted by these opulent surroundings. And I thought this personality to be a materialist, sense enjoyer, a Vishai. So I'm thinking, see, I didn't take a formal Diksha again yet. So I would like to take Diksha so it will at least will forgive me from these offenses. And Mukunda Prabhu said, yes, this is a very good idea. So after this earthquake type of ecstasy, Pundarika Vidyanidhi gradually came back to external consciousness. He saw the mess, but he couldn't care less, you know. I mean, was still reeling from this deep thunderstorms of emotion. So then they Gadadhar Pandit asked, "Can I take initiation from you?" Pudarika Vidyanidhi kindly accepted. "Yes, for me it's very auspicious. Only after many lifetimes one can get a disciple as qualified as you. So let's find a proper auspicious day in the calendar and let's do this initiation." So everybody went home like that. In the night, when everybody was asleep, Pundarik Vidyanidhi went outside, unnoticed by anybody. And he went to the house of Nimai Pandit, Lord Chaitanya. It was night. So he went there just at the time in which Lord Chaitanya was getting up. But still, see, Lord Chaitanya is supremely popular. So there was always somebody around. You know, like you see sometimes, a great personality, there's always somebody around. Always whatever, ready to offer some service, ready to offer some assistance, just being there to watch, to see, to smell, whatever. Then there were so many people already in the house somehow. And Nimai Pandi wakes up and he sees Pundarik Vidyanidhi. He considers himself his own father. Vishwanath Vrindavan Das Thakur says that no pen can write appropriately about the atmosphere created in that room. But he does say, the Lord Chaitanya started shouting in joy, "Pundarik Vidyanidhi, finally you have come. Thank you, I'm so happy, I'm so glad you have come. Oh, my father, you have come." And then he grabbed him in an embrace. And the author of Chaitanya Bhagatam says, this embrace was so tight, it was looking like Lord Chaitanya wanted to merge in the body of Pundarik Vidyanidhi. And the historical documentation reports that embrace lasted 3 hours. 180 minutes of almost paralyzed embrace with a river of bhav, a river of prema, a river of deep feelings of love. And this is explained because who is Pundarik Vidyanidhi? He is Vrishabhanu Maharaj. He is the father of Srimati Radharani herself. So Lord Chaitanya was in the mood of Srimati Radharani and therefore it was the mood of a daughter of Vrishabhanu Maharaj. And this explains the relation, the filial affection, the Vatsalya Rasa. And Gadadhar Pandit, who is also Srimati Radharani, explains the nature of progression of the relation as Shisha and Guru. Because Guru Shisha is also in the Vatsalya category. It's a parental relation. So the father in Vraja Lila became the Guru in Gaura Lila. So this is an example of the importance of not mistaking appearances for reality. We should not put people in a box. I'm sure all of you, most of you are familiar with this expression, putting people in a box. People in a box means in our mind, we classify, we categorize, and we put a neat label. This person is this, this, this. Full stop. One box here. Okay, here. This person, okay, this is a different little category, size, no, measurement, okay, length, the weight, okay. This is, okay, he's come from this place. Okay, another box, label him, on the shelf. So you neatly categorize everybody and your mental room, you have a huge room full of shelves, full of boxes. And these are the people of our lives. So we end up dealing with boxes, not with people anymore. And our life becomes dry, because how juicy can be a life in which you relate only with boxes? So we lose the opportunity to extract the rasa, the juice, when we put people in the box. And we start relating to boxes. Because the phenomena is that when we depersonalize others, automatically we depersonalize ourselves. We minimize, we affect our capacity of perceiving the other. Sometimes it's a small thing, like looking in the eyes of people. Of course, there are intergender guidelines, so don't take me literally and universally. But at least intragender, between the same gender, male with male, female, is acceptable. Sometimes it's a small thing, looking at the eyes of people. And seeing, when you look at the eyes of people, you will see, you will discover that these people are alive. First of all, because if they're dead, they would have no open eyes. But because they have feelings, they have emotions. And these emotions and feelings and thoughts are always changing. And often, we don't relate with the real persons, even materially speaking. We relate with the image of the person we have stored in our memory. So, although we apparently live in the present, Sunday, the 29th of July, 2007, is the present, is today, we actually only deal with the past. So we are always tasting a kind of stale preparation. Because we are not eating the chapati cooked today. We are eating the chapati which we processed and eaten maybe 5 years ago, 10 years ago, when we first got to know the person. But the person has changed. The person has transformed, has developed, has evolved. And we miss a great opportunity if we don't update, upgrade our version of the person. And after some time, it doesn't work anymore. It's like you have Windows, okay? There was Windows 3.1. You laugh. I don't see what the humorous is there in Windows 3.1. But you laugh. I'm glad. Then you had Windows 95. Then you had Windows 98. Then Windows 2000 and this and that. So something that was running on 3.1, some program, you cannot even run anymore in your pro computer now. There's so much gap in the structure. It just doesn't work anymore. So we lose relations among devotees also because we try to run a new program, the new improved version of people with the old operating system. It doesn't work. There is like a short circuit. Because they have advanced and we are still thinking, oh, he's that person who I met him 5 years ago. He didn't know how to put a dhoti on. I remember him. I explained him how to put the tilak, you know. But he has moved. He has moved on. Now he puts his dhoti without even looking, without even thinking. So people move, especially in bhakti yoga. And if we get stuck in the image of the past, we lose a lot of opportunities. Our life becomes stale and our relations become mechanical. These are some considerations on this verse. Thank you very much for your attention. Any questions or comments? One hand there, please. There is a mic coming.
Hare Krishna.
Hare Krishna.
Thank you for a wonderful class. In the light of your suggestion that we should not be prone to classifying people.
Not too much.
Not too much. But how do we perceive the classification that is given to us as Uttama Adhikari or Madhyama Adhikari or Kanishta Adhikari, which is accepted by us very readily, and we talk in terms of a neophyte devotee. We normally, that is the language that Vaishnavas use. So what is your perception about it?
My perception about the subject of Uttama, Madhyam and Kanishta is that this is the historically one of the most confusing subjects in theory and application in Vaishnavism in general and in ISKCON in particular. Because, see, these are general terminology, probably still common in many Indian languages. Kanishta, Madhyam, Uttam, no? So in itself is nothing esoteric. And due to their generality, they have a vast array of application. And the scriptures and the acharyas apply them freely in different contexts with different type of connotations. In other words, it's a word, there are words that according to the context take their meaning. Now, in some descriptions, for instance, like Srila Rupa Goswami, when he describes who are the adhikaris for pure devotional service, in the first section of Samanya Bhagavad Bhakti, in the first section of Bhakti Rasamrita Sindhu, Nectar of Devotion, he explains the definition of pure bhakti, and then he describes who is qualified, and he gives the qualification of one who is very absorbed in understanding the scriptures, and very accomplished intellectually. Why? Because he's talking about Vaidhi Bhakti. Vaidhi Bhakti means based on the scripture. So if you want to perform Vaidhi Bhakti successfully, it's good if you know the scriptures well. Because it's based on your understanding, on your grasp, on your faith, on your adherence to those scriptures. So if you know the scriptures well, you are at an advantage. So Madhyami describes as somebody who has strong faith, strong inner connection with the culture and tradition, but he may not know every time everything. And Kanishta, he doesn't have a strong faith, he doesn't have a strong basis in knowledge. Okay. Then you go, say, to the Bhagavatam 11th canto, Uttama Adhikari is described as somebody who is in the similar state of Pundarik Vidyanidhi, in his turmoil of love. It says that Uttama Adhikari means somebody who, you know, he doesn't know if it's day or night. He does not know. He's not faking. I want to see. He just doesn't know. For him, it's like in a different dimension. He doesn't know if he's dressed or naked. He doesn't know. It's just completely, you know, he has his body, but his life is beyond the body already. He's in the realm of you know, loving thunderstorms. Okay? Then you have the classic explanation of Srila Prabhupada in Upadeshamrita, Nectar of Instruction. He says, Uttama Adhikari is somebody who chants 16 rounds, follow four regulative principles, and is always absorbed in spreading Krishna consciousness. Then you go to Chaitanya Charitamrita, you see Lord Chaitanya in Varanasi, and you have Tapana Mishra, Chandrasekhar, and there it is described they were Kanishta Adhikari. But they are Nitya Parishad. They are associates of the Lord. The Lord was eating in one's house, and he was sleeping at Chandrasekhar's and eating at Tapan Mishra's. And Tapan Mishra is the father of Raghunath Bhatta Goswami. Associate of the Lord. Tapan Mishra is the one before, when he was in Bangladesh, to whom Lord Chaitanya revealed his mission. He's a great personality. How can he be Kanishtha Adhikari? So, back to your question. It depends on the context. So if we want a functional context, this is my answer. If you want a functional context for our own benefit and usage, okay, we need to go for Srila Prabhupada's definition in Upadeshamrita. He says basically there that he says even a Kanishtha Adhikari can give initiation. But the disciple should know he may not advance very much because the guru may not be giving such expert guidance. May not be so expert, may not be so knowledgeable, may not be so pure, may not be so inspired. But actually, he can also become a guru. Amara Ghyaya Guru. He is following, he's okay. If somebody is inspired, he can give shelter, give initiation. Srila Prabhupada said better, following in Srila Rupa Goswami's words, he said better to go to the Uttama Adhikari. So how do we see an Uttama Adhikari? Uttama Adhikari, basic translation, first class. How do we see a first class devotee? He gets up in the morning, he chants 16 good rounds, he follows the principles, that means no immorality, steady yogic practices, steady yogic discipline, and busy in the mission of the Lord. Whatever it is, busy in the mission of the Lord. Somebody may focus on one aspect, somebody may focus on another aspect of the mission, somebody may focus on more aspects of the mission, but he's busy. You can go, stay with him all day, you see, he's not spacing out, he's not sleeping around, he's not distracted. So this is a first class. Then, if he's inside, he's a gopi, he's a gopa, he's a cow, he's a peacock, he's a manjari, he's this, that, this is a manifestation of the Yamuna River. It's not our business. He may be, may not be, he may know, he may not know. What has to do with us? How will we process that? It takes many more gigabytes. If you know, this guru is that particular sake. So what? How are you going to process that information? How are you going to relate that to that information? Vyavasayatmika buddhir ekya kurunandana. And Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur says, and Srila Prabhupada quoted, actually molded all his life on this quote. Srila Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur said, this ekya kurunandana means take the instruction of the guru and follow and dedicate your life to the instruction. Because that's essential. Anything else?
Thank you. Thank you very much for your wonderful portrayal. What I would like to understand is, sometimes we also exhibit dual personalities, and we also see dual personalities in others. So at that time, we get bewildered, and we also bewilder others. So what should be our consciousness, how to take it? Suppose I see a person doing a good thing, I get attracted. At the same time, when he behaves in an immature way or in a different way, I get bewildered. Maybe when I approach him next time, I become more conscious. So how should, what should be my...
So what's wrong with that?
Then when I approach him, I always try to see that, you know, this particular person had this negative behavior. So I am unable to become more close in certain occasion.
We should be discriminating. I think also Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur, Srila Prabhupada quotes Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur in the third canto, in the Kapila Vani session. He says that we should be selective on what Vaishnavas we associate with. It's not that just because somebody has tilak and sika or dhoti means it's perfect. And he says we should be careful not to associate with devotees of low character. They may have some attraction for Krishna, and we respect that, we honor that, but it doesn't mean that all their all energy, their all vibration, their all mood and attitude is beneficial and exemplary. So we should be careful to, it's a thin line, not brand somebody. You follow? 18 years ago, you saw a devotee who was taking Mahaprasad with the left hand. So now 18 years later, he's a sannyasi visiting the temple. Oh, he's giving class. I'm not going to listen to his class, you know. 18 years ago, he touched Mahaprasad with the left hand. You follow? We get stuck in some mythological idea. And we don't. And it's a great offense to the person, and it's a great offense to bhakti, to the bhakti process. Because bhakti is like an airplane. People get on and they start flying. And if we get stuck, there is the famous story. There is one boy in a village. It was some simple name, like... what's that?
Pencho.
You all know the story of Pencho. You all know. The famous. It was this small village in Maharashtra near Pune. Simple village, simple family. There was this Pencho's little boy, 1 year old, running around naked, pesting stool, urine here and there. Naked. Okay? So the neighbor somehow, he was very bright face and everything, but the neighbor didn't like him, too lively, too bright. So this Pencho going around, past his stool, he will never become anything. Then this Pencho grows up, he started wearing underwear and pants, shoes, and then he started going to school. I was a very bright student, and the neighbor, what bright student is Pencho? He was running around naked. Now he's bright. What bright student? He must have cheated on the test. He must have looked at the other people. Test. What bright student? He was running around naked. But somehow this Pencho will go on. And he goes. And he comes to Bombay for university. He goes for law, jurisprudence. And somehow he's a very bright student. He gets his master. And then in the village, his neighbors... And they start, you got a master in jurisprudence with what do you call full honor, what do you call top marks. And they say, what jurisprudence? He was running naked, passing urine and stools everywhere. What judge, what jurisprudence, what law? He must have bribed the commission or something. What master and master going naked, passing stool and urine? So then he becomes a famous advocate, a judge. He gets to the, at one point, he gets elected to the Supreme Court in Delhi. He's becoming really, like, not only influential, powerful, expert, he becomes an author. He wrote books. He illuminated certain areas of Indian law. He's a constitutionalist also. He knows that, you know, he's very expert. He wrote books. They even put the university part on his name, no? So then these people near Pune in the village come to know. Well, now he's a Supreme Court. He's being invited to to America to give some symposium conference because he's a famous authority on Indian law. He's the greatest Indian law scholar in the world. He's the most respected Supreme Court judge. They say, what Supreme Court judge? He was running naked, passing urine here and there, stools. Look at this tree, was passing stool here. I remember, what America. He will also pass stool and urine there in America. So obviously, who is stuck in the urine and stool? Because that's what's in their mind. So if we get stuck to some mistake, weaknesses, imperfection, hesitations that we see in devotees, we get stuck in that. And the devotees move on. Move on with life. With spiritual life. With realization, insight, deepening their love, deepening their understanding, deepening their dedication. At the same time, we should not be gullible that, oh, he's a tilak, he has a dhoti, he's perfect. If we see, especially in some specific quantifiable areas, misbehavior, then we should be careful. We may pray for the person, we may try to help the person, we may preach, we bring up this issue to some other friends, but not just to gossip. To help. He said, look, I saw this devotee is in bad shape. I saw this, you know, he's sleeping up to 10 o'clock in the morning. He's also physically not so well. What can we do for him? You know, we speak to the guru, whatever. But doesn't mean that we take him as a role model. Just like not every person sitting on a beautiful seat, embroidery and everything, silk, gopi dots means he's a great devotee. It's not that anybody in Bombay chewing betel is a Pundarik Vidyanidhi. You may go to some big, fat wala in some big house, all marble. You may remember, oh, this looks like, really, like looks like, remembers me that situation with Pundarik Vidyanidhi. This person is also chewing betel, definitely, that's betel. And so maybe he's also a great devotee. Don't be gullible. If you are not sure, bring this verse with you. 3:2:23. Print it out. Bring a card with you when you see somebody. You're not sure. You just start singing. So if you start rolling and destroying his house, there is a chance. If you just ask, what? What is that? Don't worry, I was just saying it. Thank you very much. Grantarashima Bhagavatam Ki Jai. King Chitraketu Ki. Pundarik Vidyanidhi Ki. Srila Prabhupada Ki. Nitai Gaur Premanandi.